Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctical.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We get together here once a week, live at noon, on Tuesdays at the studios of KHOI 89.1 in beautiful downtown Ames. This is community radio. They let us on the air. We are so glad. And we get by with a little help from our friends.
Oh, yes. The Donalana Kitchen Show is sponsored in part by Practical Farmers of Iowa, a member-based, farmer-led nonprofit organization that has been strengthening farms and communities through farmer-led investigations and information sharing since 1985. You can find out more at their website, www.practicalfarmers.org.
Thanks to them, and thanks to you, our listeners, for joining us around the kitchen table today. It seems like summer is just kind of like slipping away. Oh, my goodness, what happened to it? Here we are, late August.
It'll come back.
It will? Okay.
It'll get hot again.
We usually have a good September.
It's not going to stay temperature.
But there's this kind of back to school. Ames is a university town, and we get inundated, and the inundate is starting to happen. Oh, my
yes,
goodness.
All the darling students are back.
They're back, and boy, it's hard to get a parking place. That's how it goes sometimes. So that back to school, and actually it's been kind of cool this week here in Central Iowa. And the state fair came and went, a big to-do. And I have a report from my friend Megan Filbert, who knows a lot about sheep and other things, and I check in with her every now and then. She went to the fair.
She's the livestock coordinator at Practical Farmers of Iowa.
Yes, she is. So she had some things to do down there, and she said, oh, Lana, got my latest favorite fair food.
Uh-oh.
Deep fried pickle.
Ooh.
Now, that's what I said. You was my first reaction, but she described it. Okay. Dill pickle. I like pickles. Dill pickle. Somehow they attach some cream cheese to it. I don't know how. Then they wrap it up with some prosciutto. Huh?
Say deep fried prosciutto.
Okay. Well, but there's a pickle. I mean, the major thing is a pickle. And that's a structure, I suppose. And then somehow there's some sort of coating. I don't know whether it was dipped or wrapped. She said, you don't want to ask questions at the Iowa State Fair. You just, it's dipped and wrapped in something. Mm-hmm. And then it's deep fried.
Is it on a stick?
She said, no, this was not in a stick. It was kind of like eating an egg roll.
Huh.
But anyway.
You know, I'm not sure that Old Main doesn't have something like that.
Huh?
We might have to go over and have some beer and deep fried pickles. I don't know.
Wait, you know what? That sounds pretty good. Iowa State Fair, deep fried pickles, huh? Oh, and I have a couple of quick news items here. Tick-a-tick-tick-a-tick-tick-tick. That's the ticker tape here at the Donalana Kitchen Radio Show. We do have a ticker tape, and we have news. News! Here are the cooking contest winners. The Ames Downtown Main Street Farmers Market had a cookie contest. Oh, lots of fun. There were 12 contestants that entered. Cook's Emporium was the sponsor. The judges' choice winners were first place, Jody Fox from Boone, Iowa. Albert's Blueberry Cookie.
Hmm. Oh, thank goodness it wasn't a chocolate chip. We don't like chocolate
chips.
These
are great.
But
now, second place. Thea Brenner from Ames. Peach Raspberry Jam Pockets.
Oh.
Third place, John Anderson from Ames. Just Pig Out Cookies. I don't know what was in that, but
Could have been everything.
Yeah. And the People's Choice winner was Jody Fox with her Albert's Blueberry Cookie. Thanks to Lojean Peterson for that information. It's good to know that there's good cookies out there. That's great. Oh, also another small news item. This happened last week, but it just kind of made me smile. Okay. The McFarland Park folks, last August 18th, last week sometime, they had a Live Like a Pioneer Day, inviting people to come and experience.
Oh,
isn't that a good idea?
Yeah.
So they traveled back to the 1860s and discovered life as a pioneer. And I like this last line to really get into the experience here. Bring your own sack lunch and sunscreen.
Huh. What does that mean? They parked a covered wagon out there
they
or something?
They must have. They must have. Well, the
Who
idea,
knows?
Well, the Pioneer sack lunch and the Pioneer sunscreen. Well, it's nice they have that sort of thing.
Well,
and
Pioneer, Pioneer sunscreen would have been a sunbonnet.
There you go.
Of course.
Of course. Of course. Of course. That's good.
I have something a little old-fashioned that I've brought you here this morning.
What?
I got some Helen Gunderson gooseberries, and I made gooseberry jam.
It is the season.
I know. I think you'll enjoy it.
Thank you for someone who loves to fuss or is willing to fuss with those little gooseberry tails.
Oh no. Let me tell you.
What? You cook her down. And
I picked the leaves out, which is fairly easy.
Oh, thank you.
They rise to the top in the water, rinse the whole thing off, threw it in the pan with the, I put always a little salt and pepper, just a little, and sugar, of course, and cooked them down, ran them through the food mill, and then after I tasted the dregs in the food mill, I liked them well enough. It had cooked down the little spiky things. I put it right back in the jam because it gives it a little more body.
A little more body.
And then the last insult that I do is I put a little cornstarch in for thickening.
It'll do it.
A complete cheat.
It'll do it.
Complete cheat.
It'll do it.
But that is not canned.
Yeah.
You know, so put it in the fridge and eat it right away.
Well, get my toast out, I guess.
Yeah, but it's very, you know me, I don't put too much sugar in. So
gooseberries are lovely.
Yep. And it's the purple gooseberry, so it's really a lovely color.
Oh, see, end of summer. That's one of the nice things about end
That's
of
right.
summer. There we are. Ah, we humans are an innovative lot. We've experimented and tried many, many things. We've learned to eat many, many things. Today, at our kitchen table, is someone who is encouraging us to experiment and broaden our horizons. Shelby Smith. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
She is a brand new, let's call her a small-scale farmer here in central Iowa, and she is growing and marketing and selling a protein product. She has, hang on to your hats, folks, she has crickets for sale. Yes, she does. Shelby, tell me about your farm and your business.
Yeah, so I own Jim and Eat Crickets, which Jim and Eat, so GYM-N-Eat, EAT. obvious little play on words there.
Yeah, and she has the t-shirt on, and it has a little logo with a cricket holding a barbell.
Yeah, so trying to keep the fitness theme going. But yeah, so I raise crickets for human consumption.
That can be done, huh?
That can be
done. Yum!
Yes.
Now, this is maybe kind of a new thing to this part of the world, but why crickets? Do other people eat crickets?
You know, 80% of the world eats insects.
You're kidding.
Not kidding.
On purpose?
On purpose.
Yes,
exactly, by choice.
It's a major food staple everywhere except...
Everywhere except for the U.S., Canada, parts of Western Europe.
Uh-huh.
We're really the ones that are behind the times on that.
I've had Mexican... Well, they're not crickets. What are they? Grasshoppers.
No, they'd be grasshoppers, yes. Uh-huh. So they're called chapulinas.
Chapulinas.
Yeah.
They taste like potato chips,
I have to tell you. Yeah. Generally speaking, they're seasoned with a little bit of chili and lime and then roasted, so it's quite the delicacy down there.
So, why cricket? Why? How did you get started in crickets?
Well, also, why would anyone want to eat a cricket? Please explain that.
Yeah. So, I will start with how and why, and then I will go into why.
Why
you would eat the cricket. Yes. More why. So I was living in Ireland for 4.5 years. I was an investment banker over there, traded equity derivatives for the National Bank of Canada.
But you're originally from Iowa. You are an Iowa girl through and through.
Yes. I'm an Ames girl through and through.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Grew up just outside of Ames. Went off to college in Philadelphia, played basketball in college, and then went over to Ireland with a program called Sport Changes Life. Was lucky enough to get my master's at Trinity College in Dublin. So have a...
Fun.
Exactly. So it was awesome. Had an MSc of finance from Trinity College and started working in a bank and didn't really...
Just an obvious trajectory for a farm girl. Exactly.
So I did that for a while, and then just, you know, last fall about this time was just really sick of it and said, you know, enough of this investment banking.
What were you sick of?
It was all sorts of things. You know, I'd kind of had feelings of not really enjoying it the year prior. It was one
it
of
kind of boring?
Well, yeah, it's kind of boring, and it's kind of one of those that... You're just moving these big fictitious amounts of money from one fictitious bucket to another fictitious bucket.
So you're like just indoors on the computer for hours and...
Yep, all day long. So,
oh, dear.
Exactly. And anyone who knows me well, you know, I'm a very active person. It's kind of hard to see
me
behind
a desk. Did you at least have a stand-up desk?
No.
I was
actually trying to sweet-talk my way into getting a stand-up desk, but I hadn't gotten one by the time I left. Yeah, so it was... For me and my active lifestyle and everything, it wasn't great. And then, you know, I wasn't really building anything, and I wasn't really helping anyone. So it was one of those that felt like a waste of a lot of potential.
Okay, I want to bring this up because I heard another interview of you. You weren't really helping anyone.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really important.
Yeah.
And I, you know, where do you think that drive and understanding to do that came from for you?
Well, you know, I think fundamentally we all have the fundamental human responsibility of leaving the world a better place than we came into it.
I hope that's true. Yeah. I hope that's true.
No, or you know, even smaller, just if your actions every day can reduce the suffering in the world by some, you know, amount, whatever you do.
Or at least not contribute to it.
Yes, and you know, if that's the case, if that's what it takes day to day, whereas the previous day you might have contributed to the suffering, if the next day that you can in some way not contribute, you are therefore reducing the overall suffering in my mind. It was one of those, I wanted to build something and actually see, you know, that's the thing about growing up on a farm. Every year you plant something and you harvest something, so you get to see the work that you've applied. Whereas every day when I went in the office, sure, like we did a trade and I moved these fictitious buckets, I never saw that physical money. I never saw any of, you know, I didn't see any of that. So
you were, however, I'm sure very well compensated.
Well, yeah, you know, high finance is generally speaking is a well compensated occupation.
And that usually keeps people at it.
Exactly. And it was, you know, it also came down to one of those things. I am human. So if I had stuck around too much longer, you know, they may have made me some offer that I wouldn't have been able to refuse. So it's one of those things that knowing myself, it was kind of time to walk away. So I came back in October of last year and started farming with my dad, traditional corn and soybeans kind of thing.
Were they surprised to have you make this decision?
I think they probably were, but they'd kind of been putting the bug in my ear for the previous about year and a half to come back.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
My.
So I think, I don't know if I took it as a little bit of a joke at first and then, you know, started thinking about it and was like, well, you know, maybe I could do that, but... So, yeah, it was by October of last year, like I said, came back just in time for harvest. Growing up, I was not really one for all the chores and all that kind of stuff and driving the tractors. That was more my brother's gig. But I was always playing basketball or soccer, you know, every single sport possible. I was busy. I didn't have time to do that.
Right, anything but deal with soybeans.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. So it was a steep learning curve, obviously, when I landed on October 1st. Got thrown in the grain cart, I think, day two. Spilled corn everywhere, but, you know, I got forgiven somehow, which is fine. Hopefully by the end of it, I was kind of up to par. But yeah, so then all winter long, my dad said, you know, if you want to find a niche and go after that, you know, something more small scale than corn or soybeans, you don't want to fight what I've been doing for the last 30 years.
Was he thinking... Well, I know with a lot of when the second generation comes home and wants to farm, it's an issue. Is there enough land? How does the family support two farm incomes on the same amount of land? So you chose a really large project here.
Yeah. Well, so
picks up a closet or something.
So it wasn't necessarily that so much as, you know, traditional corn and soybeans, you're at the mercy of the markets. You are.
Which is not good right now.
Yeah, no, which is
not
great.
Your dad is probably not a happy camper this year. Maybe the worst in a dozen.
Yeah, which is not great. And then, you know, you look at the sustainability of the monoculture of farming and all of that kind of thing, and you start to look at soils.
Do you have these discussions with your parents?
Yeah, you know, actually, it's one of those we... my dad was one of the first ones to go into strip till and do that whole thing, which is much better for your soil health and all of that. He started doing that, oh gosh, I want to say 13, 14 years ago.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah, so that was, you know, that was quite, quite different for farmers around here and still is. You're still trying to get people convinced that that's probably the better way to go from an erosion and a soil health standpoint.
Hey, if your soil is your wealth... You should be taking care of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like building a really fine house and then not doing the maintenance.
Yes, exactly. So, looking at all that kind of stuff, the other thing is, so I listen to a lot of podcasts like Joe Rogan, Tim Ferriss, a couple of different fitness podcasts, and eating crickets and chapulines down in Mexico and all of that had come up a couple times. And so I started thinking, huh, maybe I could do that. And on the 1st of January, I sent my parents an article about another cricket farmer that's in Iowa called the Iowa Cricket Farmer that was run in the Des Moines Register. And I said, well, what about crickets? And they both kind of looked at me, well, like, what about crickets? And I said,
crickets.
I think I could do it. So then by the 10th of January,
it's not a large startup cost.
No, relative to other.
Good.
Yes, yeah. And
relative to other food businesses.
Well, and relative to other, you know, niche livestock. Or niche.
Right. This is certainly niche livestock,
it is, yeah.
Right?
So, or niche farming in general. You know, I'd thrown around the possibility of doing like hydroponic stuff and all that kind of thing. But again, you'd be looking at a much higher startup cost. So, yeah. So by the 10th of January, I had 10,000 crickets. And here we are 7 months later.
Okay. Give me an idea of how big 10,000 crickets are, like a basketball size.
So a pound of dry roasted crickets, so we have a half an ounce of dry roasted crickets here, a pound of these is about 3,000.
3,000, okay.
Yes. So 10,000 crickets, when I bought them, were
Were baby crickets.
They were 2 weeks old. So they fit in a box that was about,
shoebox.
Yeah, about a shoebox size,
okay,
easily.
Okay.
So not a whole lot of space. Mm-hmm. So I started out in two of these 18-gallon storage bins.
Well, thinking of dealing with small livestock, people have kept bees forever.
Yep.
Insects. Bees. Well, it's sort of the same. Well, not sort of the same thing because you don't eat the bees directly.
No, but you eat the bee spit.
I was going to say you eat their puke.
Yeah.
See?
Hello.
We're
quite accustomed to it.
Let me get to the ick factor here. That's true. We eat a lot of animal products. The idea of eating a chunk of cow, maybe. We had to learn how to do that, too, and drink the cow's milk. Oh, you. You know, who would do that? Eggs.
Yeah. Comes out of the rear end of the chicken.
Oh, boy. The discussion here is just going right down here. But we have learned to eat a whole lot of different protein sources, and we can do that, too. Talk about the protein. Why crickets? Why? What is so good about the, besides being crunchy and yummy, what's with the cricket thing and the idea that they're a healthy thing to eat?
Yeah, well, it's interesting that you bring up that, you know, we've learned to eat all of these things. Crickets are actually the same family as lobster and shrimp.
Really?
Yes, and so lobster and shrimp originally was actually given to prisoners because people thought lobster was disgusting. So,
that's true.
You know,
that's true.
We've come a long way with that.
That was poor folks'
yes,
food.
Yes, exactly. So what's to say that we can't do that with crickets as well? But why you'd want to eat crickets, they're 60% protein by dry weight. So that is double the protein of beef. They have more iron than spinach, more calcium than milk. They're a great source of vitamin B12. And then they have closer to the proper ratio of omega-6s to omega-3s. So the average American diet is somewhere around 20 to 1 on omega-6s to omega-3s, omega-3s being the higher quality. So these guys are a good option for that as well.
That's great. And Lobsters and shrimp. Yeah, if you think about it, it's very small.
But you're eating the shrimp peels also.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So you certainly don't individually dissect these little things. You eat the whole cricket.
You eat the whole cricket.
That's probably a good idea.
And what's the length of the life cycle of a cricket?
Yeah, so from egg to fully grown is generally about 8 weeks. Mm. So the max life cycle, they'll probably live to be about 10 weeks, and that's either in captivity or in the wild. They're only about a 10-week cycle. So it's very short in terms of the turnover and all of that mm-hmm. kind of thing, mm-hmm. but each female lays 5 to 10 eggs per day.
So in your flock, your herd.
Orchestra is actually the term.
Orchestra. Oh, yes. Oh, bravo. That's lovely.
In your orchestra of crickets, they are sustainable. They replicate themselves.
Yes.
Ah, that's
so
good.
You only had to buy one shoebox.
Yep, only the 10,000. And then since then, I've been able to breed my own. So I've expanded my population. It's probably somewhere around 200,000. That being said, I killed a whole bunch of them, or harvested, rather, I suppose, a whole bunch of them yesterday. Uh-huh. But that being said, I do have a lot of babies that are hatching right now, so they're rapidly replacing.
Oh, how neat.
Yeah.
Well, what do you feed them?
Chicken feed.
Really?
Yes. Oh. But technically, you could feed them vegetable scraps. You could feed them all sorts of things. The reason that I do chicken feed is because it's dry, so I don't have as much of a mold issue. Whereas if I'm doing stuff that's, you know, not dried out, if I'm doing vegetable scraps or something like that, then you have a little bit more of a mold issue and potential pathogens that you just don't want.
And do you have to worry about the nutritional balance or anything?
I haven't gotten that far yet. Full disclosure, it's one of those things I do need to test some different feed blends and all of that kind of thing. But I'm so early in this that I was more concerned with
keeping them alive.
Yes, exactly. Making them hatch. Keeping
and you are
going to
learn as you go along.
Exactly.
You are listening to KHOI. This is the Donalana Kitchen Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. Back, we're around the Donalana Kitchen table today with Shelby Smith, a small-scale farmer, a new farmer, a beginning farmer with a great project. She's growing protein for our market. She grows crickets, and she's talking about farming crickets. A lot of people deal with small livestock, and we have to learn how these little things work here. So you were talking about so you don't just buy crickets, grow them up, and have to start all over again. They do perpetuate themselves. They lay eggs. How do you deal with that? How do you know that they're doing what they're supposed to do?
Yeah, so first step is knowing when they're ready to lay their eggs, and that's when they chirp.
Chirp.
Yes.
There comes the orchestra.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
So it's actually a rubbing together of the wings by the males. It's called stridulation. So it's to attract the female.
Stridulation.
Stridulation.
What a great bunch of vocabulary we're getting here.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's your word for the day. So once the males start chirping, they attract the females. Females then will they have a big long spike. That's how you tell the difference between a male and a female. The female's got a long spike.
Like a tail kind of thing?
It just really looks like a spike.
Okay. And it's on the back end.
Yes, exactly. Okay. So what they do then with that is they will stick that, if they're outdoors, they'll just stick that in the dirt and lay their eggs.
How do they get fertilized?
That is a great question. I have yet to...
You have not seen the fertilization process.
I'm not sure that I've seen it.
They probably won't do it if you're looking.
Yeah, probably not.
The modesty of crickets. Okay.
They're a pretty skittish bug as it is, so yeah, they're probably pretty shy. But yeah, so what I do is I take a cake pan full of moist peat moss and stick it in their bin with them once they started chirping, and the females will just crawl up there and lay their eggs. And then after a couple days, I'll take that out and put it in a different bin. And it takes generally anywhere from 10 to 14 days for the pinheads, which are the babies, to start hatching. And then once they've started hatching and hatched out enough.
You just like see the movement after a while.
Oh, you definitely see the movement. There's each female lays between 5 and 10 eggs a day. So,
get a chicken to do that.
Yeah, so it's a lot of babies in one of those bins, you know, when they've started hatching for sure.
Okay.
So then eventually they get moved into a big bin and where they'll grow.
So we're dealing with a dynamic living thing here. Is there? Oh, there must be a society, a network of cricketers. How do you learn this? Is there like people that you can
cricket
call?
Cricket Markers of America?
Yeah, or something.
Actually, there is the National Association of Insect. Oh, I butchered that. It's called NACIA. It's the North American Coalition for Insect Agriculture. Sorry,
Of course, there is.
So it was actually just reestablished this year. It had been established back in 2015, 2016, but obviously we're a very new,
new unstable organization.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes. So it's gone through its own trials and tribulations, but so there is a network
for information sharing, basically.
For information sharing, you know, eventually, hopefully, some sort of lobbying power for political reasons and that kind of thing.
Well, what do you have to do? Just follow basic food safety laws?
Well, so, yes, you have to be, technically speaking, this is a protein, so it's regulated by the FDA, the USDA as a protein, but it's not recognized as completely safe for human consumption. I can't remember what the actual acronym for that one is.
GRAS, G-R-A-S.
I
wonder why not. I mean, it is a rather old established food source. So
yeah. Yeah. Well, but see.
Not exactly novel.
Yeah. So technically speaking, like, we don't really have to be certified under anything because it's not grass. And, but the culture of the USDA and the FDA in the U.S. versus, like, say, Europe is more of a, you're doing what you're doing. We will retrospectively prosecute you if we don't like what you're doing. Whereas in Europe, it's a, you ask permission before you do it, and we'll tell you whether we like it or not so that you don't get yourself in hot water kind of a thing.
Well, I'll tell you, I would rather eat crickets than this new lab-cultured Beyond Meat, if you give me a choice.
We are talking things that sustain us. This isn't just you just don't eat this stuff as a dare. Why don't you describe what you have brought in today? Hold it up to the microphone and describe what we have, like, food products here.
Yeah, so I have brought a couple of things that are available at the Ames Farmers Market every weekend, except for this past weekend. Sorry about that. I had to go down and do the State Fair deadlift competition. but so I do, at the farmer's market, I will sell protein bars, and then I do the whole roasted crickets as well. So I brought these for you guys to try out if you want. So I brought the apple cinnamon protein bar. So the thing about my protein bars is they are all whole foods. They're sugar-free. So sugar-free, gluten-free, paleo-friendly, except for the peanut butter ones, because technically peanuts are not paleo, but it's okay. They're still delicious. And then I also brought the dry roasted crickets. Go ahead.
This is paleo with dates, cashews, almonds, cricket flour.
Yep.
Okay. But paleo means what?
High protein, right?
Yes. Yeah. So paleo is, it's grain-free. It's Paleolithic diet, if you've ever heard of it. It's
I've
big
heard of it,
in CrossFit. It's big. So there's.
Because it's high, it's very high protein.
Yeah.
And kind of low carb, right?
Well,
also?
It's, yeah. So it's, all, it's whole foods based. So it's, no grains, no dairy, no legumes.
Ah.
So.
But eggs are okay.
Eggs are fine. Yep, eggs are fine. Pretty much any other source of protein, other no soy.
Well, this tastes just like some other fruit bar that I would buy.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yep, exactly. So then that also has the cricket flour in it.
Mm-hmm.
But then I also do, like I said, I do the roasted crickets. So I do a bunch of different flavors of the roasted crickets. The ones I brought for you guys are the sea salt and pepper, because I would say those are my most natural cricket flavored ones. And texture-wise, they're like
okay,
a big
sunflower
seed.
Okay, you can eat the bars and have no idea you're eating crickets.
Yeah.
Now, eating the whole cricket is a little more obvious.
Yes.
Okay, I have four little ones in my hand here, and into the mouth they're going.
They're crunch, not moving.
Crunch, crunch. Oh, they're kind of like pepitas.
Yeah.
The Mexican sunflower seeds.
And as exactly how I characterize it to people texture-wise is that it's going to taste a lot like a sunflower seed.
Just close your eyes and you have no idea.
Yep.
So so these crickets, they grow and they die. And who makes the bars? How do you change them into a value-added product?
Yeah, so I do all of that as well. So I always...
Never a dull moment.
No. I get this question a lot at the markets of, you know, where do you get your crickets? I say, well, I raise them.
Mm-hmm.
I raise them. I roast them.
Quality control there.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
No, absolutely. And, you know, like you were saying, talking about the Beyond Meat and all the chemicals and stuff in it, I do also sell the cricket flour. So it's 100% crickets that I just grind into a flour. So
how do you grind them? Like food mill? Coffee mill?
I try. So, yeah, like think of like a coffee grinder.
Yeah.
I've tried, you know, the Nutrimill, the big, they're too light. They won't.
They just flop around like popcorn.
Yeah, it was so frustrating. But, yeah, so for now it's just like a coffee grinder. As I expand, I'm probably going to have to figure out something
That's a little limited in quantity.
Yeah.
But, and what unflavored, what are they just kind of like? Flavorless?
Yeah.
Neutral?
Well, they're kind of a nutty flavor, I would call it.
A little bit.
Yes,
oh,
a little bit of a nutty flavor. So it complements well with hummus. It complements with anything that would be somewhat nutty.
So you could just slide it into all kinds of food things, like for children or invalids or people needing more protein and more vitamins and minerals.
Yeah. You can actually, so the 100% cricket flour that I do, you can use that as a protein powder, which is much better than any protein powder that you're going to buy in the store. Because like you said, you know, you don't know what's in those. So if you're doing whey or you're doing
them, a lot of it's very highly processed.
Well, or, you know.
Especially a lot of those pea flours and the this flours and the, you go.
Well, and in all honesty, you know, the FDA does not really require supplement companies to completely disclose everything that may be in those products. So. Whereas if you're getting 100% cricket flour from me, I can tell you it's 100% cricket. So, like, that's what it is. But the beauty of cricket flour as well, so you can use it like a protein powder, mix it into your smoothies, mix it into your hummus, mix it into whatever you want to do that way. But you can also bake with it. So it has characteristics of of kind of a combination of coconut flour and because it's very dense, and then baking soda. So baking soda or baking powder because it makes things rise a little bit.
Oh, it does.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yep. So you can put it you can put it into anything that calls for flour, whether it be gluten-free or regular wheat flour or anything like that. You just sub it in 2/3, 1/3 your regular flour to your cricket flour.
Two-thirds regular flour to what you can use
to
a third cricket flour?
Yep.
That's quite a lot.
Yes. Nice. Yeah. So
there's another product here and I will disclose that I am currently trying it in my garden. There, talk about using all of the products that these crickets produce. Tell us what you have in this other jar here.
Yeah, so the other thing I have is cricket frass, which is...
Frass. F-R-A-S-S.
Yes.
Cricket poop.
And say it's a polite word for poop.
Okay.
Yes. Yep, so... you know, it's great on gardens. It's
so
great.
It's like kind of like worm castings, that
kind of like
idea?
Worm castings, except for worm castings only have nitrogen, whereas these have N, P, and K.
Wow.
Yes.
And How do you collect it?
It's not really a pretty job. It's not great. But, you know, it is what it is.
What is it? The scrapings off the bottom of the container?
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then it's then sifted through a screen to, you know, get all the big stuff out that you don't want, or, you know, the cricket bodies or the cricket skins, although some of the cricket skins end up in there, which is a good thing, though.
Well, yeah, they would degrade anyway.
Yeah, it's all exactly. It's quite beneficial to the soil mm-hmm. and to the mm-hmm. plant mm-hmm. and everything that way. So, yeah, it's a natural fertilizer.
So is your dad going to go out and put this on his soybean fields?
Well, it's actually one of those things, you know, he's talked about. If I ended up with enough of it, he would look at trying it. Yeah, so it's who knows? We'll see.
This is great. This is great.
So where are you putting it in the garden?
Well, I've got some late things that, and also I'll put it in my greenhouse for the winter. I've got some.
Yeah, I was thinking houseplants.
I've got some kale and some late planted arugula and some late planted greens. I thought, they could use a little extra.
What, did you just sprinkle it on?
I did, and I raked it in, and then I planted the seeds.
Oh.
But also, I had a few plants to put out, so I have. It's a fancy trial here. I'll see. I'll see how it goes. It'll be good. Yeah, that's great. So, what is in the future for crickets?
You know, it's
you're just starting.
Yeah, I'm definitely in my infancy. Like I said, I'm 7.5 months into this, which is kind of crazy that time has flown by that fast. But I'm working on outgrowing my current space. I had a little bit of a hiccup back in June where about half of my flock, my little babies, my orchestra. My little babies, I killed them all. I didn't mean to. They just all kind of suffocated. You know, it's farming.
Too much
you learn. It's no, farming. Actually. So the bins that I'd put them in originally, I didn't realize had a little ridge at the bottom that I didn't know they couldn't get out of. So they all kind of fell into that ridge and trampled each other and died. So
a stampede. Oh,
it's
dear.
It sounds
oh,
like
dear.
Farming.
Oh, dear. Stampede in the playpen.
Yeah.
Oh,
so,
tragedy.
So if not for that, then I'd probably be outgrown of the space that I'm in. But definitely, you know, as we go into fall and winter, really need to start looking at expansion and possibly looking at doing commercial kitchen and all of that. Because right now I'm just restricted to selling at direct from home and at the farmer's market.
Don't build a commercial kitchen. Go rent a nice church kitchen.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
We got lots of commercial kitchens in this town that are underutilized.
Yeah, no, and so that was actually where I was thinking of going to first, you know, to get that started and see what happens. So then ideally I can be
in. I have to say they're delicious. I'm having some more.
Great. Give us, besides the Ames Main Street Farmers Market, give us your contact information, Shelby. This is a wonderful project here.
Yeah. So right now you can find me, soon you'll be able to find me on the website, and it will be jimandeatcrickets.com, spelled with no hyphens in it. But until that website is launched, you can find me on Instagram or Facebook. I have a Facebook page. It's just facebook.com/JimAndEatCrickets, or you can type Jim and Eat Crickets into the search bar and it should take you to me. Otherwise, you can find me on Instagram and it's Jim and Eat Crickets, but just where the hyphens would be, it's an underscore.
Oh. Fuss. And it's Jim as in the place to work.
Yes.
G-Y-M
hyphen N hyphen.
Eat. Yeah. Very good.
Given that you have a business background, you must have done projections. How long do you think it will take this endeavor for you to earn a modest living?
Oh, gosh. That all depends on how quickly I expand, I suppose. And in all honesty, I haven't done as many projections as I should have because my main concern was seeing if I could keep them alive. It was one of those I was going to walk before I could run.
Very good. Very good. We've been talking with Shelby Smith. This is KHOI. This is Taste Radio for the Heart of Iowa. Thank you. Welcome back. This is the Donalana Kitchen. Summer is not quite over yet. Still lots of garden to harvest and, fruit is coming in and not a garden to harvest and put by some of those vegetables. And here's time to enjoy an Iowa road trip or two. Last year, July of 2017, Donna and I did a little traveling around the state to find some local treasures and local things that we wanted to find out about. And we found a place to eat in Nevada, Iowa. We found a place called Starbucks. It's the real Starbucks. There's a local treasure here in central Iowa. It's been there for many, many decades. The name Starbucks may mean fancy coffee and fancy conglomerate to many people, but to folks in Nevada, Iowa, and to those of us in the know in communities all around this area, Starbucks, the real Starbucks, is a favorite fast food diner just east of town, Nevada, Iowa, on the historic Lincoln Highway. Yeah, it's been there for many, many years. It used to be, I kind of did this look, it used to be a gas station. Sort of looks like a gas station. It's been added on, and it's been there a long time. People drive from
over. What was the date, she said? Was it the 60s or the 50s?
The 60s.
The 60s.
Mid-60s, sort
of. And believe me, it's the same food.
It is, yeah.
Remarkably consistent.
It's wonderful. Yeah, and yes, truly, the original owner's name was Starbuck. So, take that, Mr. Fast Food Conglomerate, or Fancy Coffee Conglomerate Starbucks Corporation. Really, truly, you have been one-upped. Starbucks has been Starbucks in Nevada for a long, long time. Don and I made a visit. We did. It's a busy place. We were there kind of in an early afternoon, and it was full of people, and walk in, and you look up behind the person who's going to take your order at the counter. There's so much stuff to read there you wouldn't believe.
Right, and they have three soft serve machines back there.
Just humming away.
Lots of ice cream.
Donna snatched a menu. We'll talk about the menu in a little while. But we found a friendly Starbucks employee to talk to. This is the real Starbucks, and we've been talking to
Kim Williams.
And she's one of the people that keep this thing running.
I love the customers. I love the atmosphere. I wouldn't be here 17 years if I didn't.
Yeah.
I started June 1st of 2000.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, so I just had my 17th anniversary.
And has the menu kind of stayed the same?
Yes, it stayed the same.
Good.
Tell us what a Coney dog is.
A Coney dog is with chili. It's a chili dog, and we have regular ones, and we have footlong.
And you make the chili yourself.
And I make the chili, and I make the taco meat for the taco stuff. We make our own beef burgers. We pound our own tenderloins.
Ah, see?
We make our own burgers. We patty our own burgers for all the burgers. It's not the ready-made.
Mm-hmm.
So a Coney dog comes from Coney Island. So it's sort of a New York.
Some of the older folks that come here do ask for a Coney Island.
Yeah.
And I look at them like, okay.
I'm one of the older folks. It's a Coney Island. And then you also have Philly cheesesteaks.
Yes.
And then a whole Mexican menu with tacos.
And super nachos.
And the baskets. Now this is an old traditional thing. You've got shrimp baskets, chicken baskets, and
chicken strip
baskets. Right.
Or you can get the dinner, and the only difference is you get one of these homemade sides.
Okay, and the sides are, coleslaw or potato salad.
Right.
Perfect.
Yes.
Perfect. Now, do you get a lot of takeout orders too? People come.
Oh yeah. People call in.
Yeah.
We have a register. Right. The register on that side is for nothing but call-ins.
Oh, okay. And then what about you've got cakes and pies? Don't tell me you make the pies yourself.
Yeah. Everything.
Wow. And I noticed you also, you were talking about the high school kids. Lana and I were just talking about what jobs did we do in high school, because that is a time where you get a lot of beginning business experience.
Right. My daughter is 28. She started working here when she was 14.
That's right. Yep, yep.
Mm-hmm. And she works at Iowa State now, mm-hmm. but in the summertime she comes back here.
And so how many high schoolers do you usually use in the summertime?
It varies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it varies.
And you usually take them with no experience, right?
So yes.
You're doing
We give them the experience.
On the job training.
On the job training.
I think that's an important local resource.
Right, right. It gets very crazy after school over here.
You are convenient.
If you're going to come and have a nice quiet meal, don't do it after at 3:18.
Okay.
Because that's when school gets out.
Right, we're near the high school, right?
The middle school and the high school is right behind us.
So everybody just walks over, right?
I think it's a wonderful location, actually, myself. I wish my high school would have been next to something so wonderful.
Right. We get elderly couples that come in here, and they met their spouses here.
Oh, I believe it's right on Lincoln Highway on the sort of east side of Nevada, basically. Big sign that says Starbucks.
And deep-fried Twinkies?
Oh, right.
Yes, we have deep.
Oh, also, I noticed you do funnel cakes.
Funnel cake fries, too.
What's a funnel cake fry?
If you like funnel cakes, you'll love funnel cake fries.
Is it a savory or a sweet dish?
It's a sweet. They're the shape of a French fry.
Uh-huh.
And we deep-fry them, and then we put the powdered sugar.
Oh, boy.
Well, like Donna was looking at the menu here, and she said, it's like they've got the whole Iowa State Fair plus everything else in your kitchen right here.
Right here. Yep.
Right, and it's really easy to park, unlike going to the State Fair.
Oh, yeah, especially in the summertime because you can park over at the school.
Oh, yeah. Very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
Well, we had a delicious meal. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
And thank you for preserving these Iowa cultural institutions.
Oh, but this is not.
And 17 years later.
This is a restaurant.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, it's quick, but it's not.
You exercise, though, don't you?
Yes, I do. Because a lot of the kids will yell at me. I take them out. I take them out myself. Because I like people.
I'm
a people person. That's why they won't let me work in the kitchen.
I noticed that you were running around serving people. I thought this was a help yourself. That's this nice woman doing.
Well,
all
it
the work.
Is, but like I said, I don't mind. You know, the more I do, the faster it goes.
Yes, it's true.
I'm here at 6 o'clock in the morning.
I've worked in food business my whole life just for that. I'm not a sit down person.
Mm-mm, I couldn't sit at a desk.
Right, me either.
I couldn't.
I don't care what you pay me. I can't sit still. So,
no, me neither.
Yeah,
me
it's
neither.
Perfect.
And I like mingling. Mm-hmm. You know, and
I think
welcome.
So too. And I think we are going to have give us the flavors of the sherbet. I have to decide.
Today is wild blackberry, lemon lime, and we can twist them. Orange.
Or the dreamsicle one, right.
And vanilla, and we can twist that. Or we have the original chocolate vanilla, and we can twist it.
Okay. All right. We can do that. All right. Let's go get one. This is fun. This is why we like to do the show, right?
So we visited the real Starbucks
and
in
we
Nevada.
Had sherbet.
Sherbet.
None of this sorbet stuff. Sherbet. I tripped over the word sorbet and then I went, oh, no, right. Sherbet. Got to use the right language in the right place.
It was, and it was too. And we had it, we drove home with cones and I think maybe this has changed there. I think they supersize everything
now.
Oh,
man,
oh my
we had
gosh,
a medium cone. It was so big that I was like freezing my head by the time I ate the whole
brain
thing.
Brain freeze. We had a wonderful brain freeze. Thanks to Kim Williams for talking about her restaurant story there. This is the Donalena Kitchen, and that was a visit that Donna and I made to the Nevada Starbucks in July 2017, and we ended up with some cones. Oh, we did. We had sherbet on the way home.
We did.
Now, to connect things together here, I bet those would have been delicious with some crickets sprinkled over the top, like sprinkles.
I'm gonna sometime do that for a party food.
Yeah,
just to
it's crispy and
talk
salty.
About a conversation starter.
It is, and we have to kind of realize it's always good to know where your food comes from. And it all it all comes locally grown. It all comes from the same place. We're all part of the earth. It grows good things. Yes, it does. Well, there's some upcomings we'd like to talk about this Thursday. There is a bread baking class happening at Wheatsfield Co-op.
Yes, the our wonderful local baker, Nate Kimperman at Wheatsfield, is teaching sour bread at home, the basics. And you will learn how to do it, and you will go home with your own mama starter. Ah. So that's Thursday, 6:30 to 8 p.m. at Wheatsfield.
Yes, it is. They have great cooking classes all
the time. And he's a very good baker.
Oh, that'll
very be good. Very good bread baker.
Oh, it's so nice to have many different kinds of breads. And his sourdough is pretty darn tasty. Yes, it is. Learn how to do it yourself. It's always good to learn how to do it yourself. And again, talk about things that are local. The local yeasts that kind of enliven our life. After all, that's what sourdough is. It kind of uses what's here naturally. Those are little living things,
too. Are they considered
too.
Plants or animals?
Oh, I think yeast is a separate little thing. I don't think they have anything to do with crickets.
But they're alive.
They're alive, yes.
So it's another kind of local farming, right?
It is. It is. Oh. There we go. So that is this Thursday. And coming up. The annual Local Foods Potluck, Wheatsfield also sponsors this, the 25th. That's this Saturday, 5:30 to 8 p.m. Eat at 6 p.m.
And where is it?
At Brookside Park Maple Shelter.
Yeast is a fungi.
Oh, so that's one
so
of those.
So it's a mushroom.
Yeah, well, in the same family.
Which would be a vegetable,
family.
Right?
Oh, now it's a fungi.
No.
It's a fungi. Oh, dear. Yeah, anyway. So maybe some of that will end up at the local foods potluck. Oh, Brookside Park in Ames here, Maple Shelter, and there's going to be live local music.
Right, and it's a potluck, right? So you're supposed to bring something? Maybe I better make something with crickets on it.
Oh, that'd be good. Bring a dish to share featuring local ingredients and your own table setting. Wheatsfield will provide a dish and beer and wine. It's nice to kind of gather, and the weather's been so nice lately. Very good, very good. And also, after you've done your local potluck there, the Central Iowa Barn Dance is starting its next season here, the 2018-2019 season, August 25th.
At the usual place?
Dance at the Collegiate Wesley Annex, 130 South Sheldon Avenue. That's in Campus Town, Ames, Iowa. Starts at 7:30.
Are you calling?
I believe I am. I better shake off my dance cards.
Go here, Lana.
Yeah, anyway, Central Iowa Barn Dance. You don't need to know what you're doing because
Lana will tell you what to do.
That is the caller's job. And it's a wonderful opportunity to hold hands with your neighbors, circle right, circle left, swing, promenade.
And live music.
And live music by the Barn Owl Band. Yes,
oh boy.
It is. You've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen. We talked to Shelby Smith from Jim and Eat Crickets here in Ames, a local farmer just starting out.
Young farmer. What a
delight.
We wish
her the best. We wish her the best. And we've revisited a trip to the real Starbucks. Oh, thinking of summer road trips. We've had music by John Whelan and friends from his CD Flirting with the Edge. Fine accordion music with lots of other stuff, too. We'll go out with a set of polkas called Flirting with the Edge. Listen to the Donalana Kitchen Tuesday at noon's repeat at 7 p.m. or anytime at khoifm.org. We have archives. They're streaming. You can download us on your device. Support community radio. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas with crickets in my teeth.
Oh. Good for you. That's good. We have had Fine Engineering by Evan Taylor. Eat good food and enjoy life.